You're listening to Bit by Bit, March 8th, 2008. This is Bob Sprankle, and I am joined with a variety of people. It's been a while since I've gotten a podcast out, and Kevin Jarrett and Maria Nee and I started getting into a discussion about Webkinz via email, and so we decided to have a podcast to talk about it. So welcome to Maria Nee and Kevin Jarrett, and Alice Barr and her class are here. You guys want to introduce yourself and just tell what you do and where you're coming from?
They're all shaking their heads no.
All right, Maria, why don't you start?
Okay, well, I'm Maria Nee, and I am a kindergarten teacher in Deerfield, New Hampshire. I have an all-day kindergarten class, second year that I've done it, and I'm a webcaster for co-host with It's Elementary, and last year I got really involved with Webkinz in the classroom, so... I'm looking forward to having a discussion about that.
And Kevin, you're in New Jersey?
Yes, I am in southern New Jersey near Atlantic City. I'm Kevin Jarrett. I blog at ncs-tech.org every day, which is really a resource sharing site more than a blog. I have been teaching in a K-4 lab like Bob. This is my fifth year. I was in the business world for almost 20 years when I walked away after 9/11 to pursue my dream job, which is teaching. And I was fortunate enough to find that job in my hometown, teaching at my school where my own kids went and go. And I get to say I'm surrounded by the two things I love most in the world, which is kids and technology. I'm here today because I'm very interested in the whole Webkinz craze. For a lot of the same reasons that everybody else is, although I came into it a different way through my explorations of multi-user virtual environments like Second Life. Many people feel that Webkinz is really the training ground for a 3D or a virtual community future, and that's why I wanted to explore Webkinz with Bob and Maria today and Alice and everybody else.
Right. And Alice, why don't you introduce yourself and your class, and what class is this?
This class is Technology for Teachers at Yarmouth School District. We have teachers from K to 12, and Kathy Walensky and I teach the class together. It's a 1.5 credit class, so we're here for the day today, and I thought it would be fun to take part in some of this conversation.
Is Kathy there?
Yes.
Oh, hi, Kathy. I didn't realize you were there today. Excellent. So, Kevin, before we start, you've taken some time to really immerse yourself into Second Life. You got a grant to have some time away from the classroom. You want to talk about that a little?
Sure. Let me just post this link in real quick. Well, like most teachers... a school teacher's salary is not enough to pay the bills, so I also teach online at Walden University in their Graduate School of Education and specializing with integrating technology into the classroom. And last November, I decided I wanted to get into Second Life, but I knew that there was absolutely no way I was going to have the time to do it. Walden was running an annual Faculty Excellence Grant program. And I basically wrote him and said, I want 10 grand to take 6 months off and instead of teaching to immerse myself in Second Life. And I did. So I stopped using my e-college classroom and grading papers and the rest of it and instead spent 20 or 30 or sometimes more hours a week immersed in Second Life. And the process literally has changed my life, the people I've met, the connections I've made, the things I've learned, the places I've gone have really just been terrific. And the educational community is just amazing. It's really hard to put your finger on. But the blog I posted has sort of chronicled my adventures. And I've gone with it, the things that I've learned. And I've presented both in Second Life, about Second Life, and outside of Second Life many times. And I've been very active with the International Society for Tech and Ed, ISTE as we know it. I currently run their Tuesday night speaker series where we find people to come in to talk about multi-user virtual environments in Second Life. And I was also instrumental in setting up the docent program at ISTE headquarters. I ran that for several months when it first got started, where we basically have people that are at the headquarters at different times of the day to answer questions for people that are just showing up, and all kinds of great things around the ISTE community that I've been fortunate to be involved with. But that really is the basis for my interest in Webkinz, because many people that talk about virtual environments recognize, and certainly the business world recognizes, that these multi-user environments that the kids are immersed in, whether it's Webkinz or Club Penguin or Yville to an extent, or some of these others, are really the future. And that's where all the development money's going, and where a lot of educators' interest is. And that's why I'm dying to hear how Maria has used it in her classroom, because I would love to, and I'm not sure how to proceed.
Wow, that is great. That's great work that you're doing there. I had no idea. So, yeah, in your email, you were talking about that you're getting a little bit of backlash just with the commercialism thing. So, Maria, you want to talk about how you got past that and how you got it into your classroom and your experience?
Sure do. I'm going to go. There's all a story to everything, but many years ago, when Nintendo first came out, I was teaching second grade, and I had a student that was like totally not engaged in the kinds of things we're doing. In fact, actually did not look like typical kids. He came from another district and had a full-blown IEP that really questioned some of his intelligence. And I found out that this child communicated solely through Super Mario. All of his writing was Super Mario kinds of things and Mario Brothers and through the Nintendo system. And back then, I invited him bring his Nintendo system to school. And that was a very radical thing. And I got accused of, what are you doing bringing this, you know, having a student bring this into the classroom. But I was able to get to know this student, who is now 26, and very high functioning, working in the technology world. And that little bit of background is because I think there are ways of getting to know students' life outside of school that gives us insight into who they are as people and what they can do. So last year in my classroom, I had a young girl who was very quiet, very shy. She's five. She's not assertive at all, did what she was told. But her mother would tell me, you should see her at home. She is very active on computers. She's involved with Webkinz. And I'm like, Webkinz, where have I heard that? And it was my friend Bob Sprankle who had mentioned about his daughter's use of Webkinz at home briefly, I think, in a podcast. And so I said, well, tell me more about it. And the next day, her mom presented me with a Webkinz. So I logged on. I got permission from our district technology director to unblock the site. I tried it at home for about a week, and then I opened it up in my classroom. And just by going to the site and having this young lady instruct the class in what she did on the site just blew me away, because all of a sudden, this shy, quiet, not assertive young lady became just transformed before our eyes. She became someone who was very proficient, who could share her knowledge. She moved around that Webkinz site like I just couldn't believe. She talked, and from then on, she became a leader in the classroom. She became very vocal and a very active and well-respected member of the class. And so I thought, there's something to this, because for the most part, the Webkinz movement hadn't really caught on. It was just before all the somewhat negative publicity about Webkinz was happening. So we adopted our little Webkinz, and he became a part of our classroom. We voted to decide whether it was going to be a boy or a girl. We voted name and so on and so forth. And then, usually at the end of the day, we took about 15 minutes each day to check on him. And we went to the Webkinz World. We made decisions about what he could eat, what he could buy. We played the daily games, but not we did the routine activities such as checking on your Webkinz and things like that. But we didn't really get into gaming as such. But I'll leave it at that for now.
That's wonderful. Can I jump in?
Yes, please. Definitely.
Okay, so that sounds terrific. And so you had basically a class Webkin.
Yes.
That exposed them to all the great things they could see and do. And at that point, did any of the students say, oh, I have a Webkin at home?
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened. Because, and I would say out of a class of 18, probably 5 of them at that point had a Webkin. No one went rushing home saying, you know, I need to get a Webkinz. It really, it was one of those, it was the time of year, probably late January, early February, when they had, they hadn't been out for very long. I did get a little nervous because it was commercialism, and many years ago I had been burnt because a parent criticized us for participating in the Pizza Hut reading program or something.
Yep, that happened to us recently too.
And so I really tried to keep all of those commercial things out of my classroom, and I was feeling guilty. But at the same time, I wanted to parents how this online presence for 5-year-olds was going to work. And we all have to talk about internet safety. We have to talk about all kinds of things that students and others do to protect themselves online. And I had always had to do that with sort of out of context. And now I had the perfect context.
Oh, absolutely.
Context for learning. So we talked about passwords, and the kids are like, oh, can I take the Webkinz home? Can, you know, tell me the password. And I'm like, oh, I could never tell you my password. And I also talked about how much time we were going to spend. And the kids that did have Webkinz, we talked about, well, you're not going to spend all your afternoon online. You know, we live in such a beautiful town. You'll need to get outdoors. But I was also able to write to parents about that. And I didn't write defending myself. I really wrote as if I was informing them about some other opportunity that was there for their children, and that they didn't have to rush out and buy a Webkinz. We had the Webkinz in the classroom, and it was going to be part of our learning environment.
Well, that's true.
Excuse me for interrupting. Sorry, Kevin. I'm going to bump out of the Skype chat. We got a lot we got to do today, but I just wanted to give them a little bit of an overview.
Okay.
So thank you for having us.
Great to have you.
Enjoy class.
Yeah. Thanks. Thank you.
Take care.
And so part of our conversation when we were at the site, we also, I mean, it's something that I never even imagined because we started talking about.
So without Skype, how do you hear the dialogue?
Whoops.
All right, so okay. I think Alice is still in Skype. Oh, there she goes.
There she is.
Yep.
So
go ahead, Mary.
We were able to talk about things like money. What are you going to spend your money on? I basically was at home on the weekends and the evening doing some of the games, the ones that I could win and earn money with.
To get some cash flow.
To get some cash. It was pretty pathetic. But we talked about, you know, what are we going to buy? You know, and the kids are like, oh, let's buy 10 TVs. And I was able to have these discussions with them, like, well, why would we want 10 TVs? And then we were able to talk about food and diet and what was appropriate that way to buy, exercise, what kind of rooms would we want to add on to our house. I was amazed. And then we were able to do higher level math computation that people would say, There was no way kindergartners can do this. But we would look at our cash on hand. We would look at what we needed. We ended up talking about percentages because the little Webkin's health was based on 100% healthy, 100% happy, and 100% hunger, I think, full. So there were so many things that happened in class that outweighed what we, you know, what I felt were some negative things. And I was helping them know how to use an online environment safely.
Yeah, absolutely agree. I have to say that I'm very envious of your classroom position. And even though I currently teach in a lab setting like Bob, and I love the lab, and I love having 530 kids that I get to see because I literally get to know every kid in town, which is terrific. The ability to relate to, 20, 24, 25 kids is just very powerful, and I can really see how what you've laid out would be a terrific learning experience with them, and talk about perfect context and just an amazing environment in which to illustrate. I mean, from what I know about Webkinz, watching my 12-year-old go through it, you've got every possible curriculum angle in there that you could want: nutrition, money, social studies, social skills, math, just anything. And that's sort of the appeal to me, is that it's such a rich environment with so many opportunities that there has to be a way to use it. But the challenge that I'm facing is I have those 500 kids, and if I did something with Webkinz, I would have to do it at the absolute minimum with an entire grade. What I've been thinking about doing is purchasing. I was recently fortunate to be named Teacher of the Year in my district, and they're giving me $300 to buy supplies for my classroom. Well, I don't need anything for my classroom. My technology thing I need, we just get for the most part. But I was thinking I would buy 25 Webkinz and have them essentially as Webkinz for the classroom, that the kids would come in and come into my lab and use them as part of a lesson with a curriculum that I would develop. And when I initially raised the issue with the folks on our Ed Foundation about using Webkinz, there was, even as an after-school club, there was a pushback on the basis that socioeconomically that we would be creating pressure for these kids to, as you said, run home and say, you know, I want to have one. Or even worse, when little Johnny, you know, who doesn't have a computer at home or doesn't have a Webkin, you know, is either teased or feels like he's left out when all the other kids talk about the ones that they have. And so that's sort of my concern. I know I can build a curriculum with meaningful, authentic stuff around Webkinz, but I'm just not sure how to sell it to my administration and to the reluctant parents, some of whom, incidentally, forbid their kids to have them on the basis of the commercialism. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you dealt with that?
Well, I have to admit that last year's class definitely probably went out and bought, some of the families went out and bought Webkinz as a result of our work in the classroom. I think at Easter time and at the end of the year, several of them received a Webkinz as a present. I had two children in my class last year that did not have computer access. And even if they could have a Webkinz, they did not have the ability to use it online. And I had one child who came to class with kind of a Webkinz lookalike and was very excited because her mom had told her that this was a Webkinz. And another child in the classroom said, "That is not, you know, it doesn't have the symbol on the bottom." And we had to deal with, well, is that okay? You know, is that okay to necessarily, can't you still love a stuffed animal even though it may not be a Webkin? And we dealt with those kinds of things. I didn't have parents criticize me that I knew of about for doing this. I had some teachers wondering what we were doing, and why we were doing that, and kind of roll their eyes. But when I talked to them about, well, how do you talk about online safety with your students? they didn't really have a lot to say. The other thing we did towards the end of the year is each child got to take the Webkinz home for a night. And that was a really neat experience for me, because in the past I had always had a teddy bear or some kind of stuffed animal that went home with a journal for the students to keep and inform us about. And this last year, we sent the Webkinz home. If the child didn't have a computer at home, they had access to taking care of the Webkinz in class for during our work period as kind of one of the stations that wouldn't have been a usual of station in class. They had X amount of Kins cash to spend at home on the Webkinz. They had to let us know how they decided what they bought for the Webkinz, what kind of food. And they had to give us kind of a little report, like, so what did you do with the Webkinz? As far as spending time online, I asked parents to have the child not spend any more time than 20 to 30 minutes doing the Webkinz activity. And then I also said that I needed to have a little journal that told me what they did with the Webkinz offline. So it might be read a book, it might be go out and play. So I tried to encourage both activities. And the kids were great because they decided how much money that was going to be spent per visit. And when someone went over budget, they were just like, well, how could you spend that? We are going to need to sell back some of those things so that we can get more money. So
there's so many issues that are coming up here, which is just so great. I mean, you know, part of me thinks, you know, when you talk about like that knockoff Webkinz, you know, that really has nothing to do with the technology. You know, I'm sure we had that issue with Cabbage Patch dolls, you know, or whatever. And so those things are going to come up. And, you know, Kevin, I think, you know, you were asking about, you know, if we bring this in, are we encouraging this consumerism of just the Webkin brand alone? And I'm grappling with that a lot, you know, because I think we do that more than we've ever done as educators using these Web 2.0 tools where all these things are free, but they're supported by... Wow. Supported by advertising. What was that?
My cell phone ringer is Sweet Child of Mine, Guns N' Roses, what can I tell you? My daughter raced down to hand it to me as it was ringing. Oh, cool.
That's great. So, and, you know, we're bringing in a lot of advertisement that's connected with these Web 2.0, and I'm not comfortable with that. However, you know, no matter what, it's going to be there. You know, and something like Webkinz is going to be there. So, you know, just my personal experience was last year when I started in the lab, I asked, well, I didn't have kindergarten, but I asked first grade how many of them had Webkinz, and nobody knew what I was talking about. This year, wow. I'd say 80 to 90% in each class has a Webkinz. So it's coming no matter what. And like you said, Maria, people give them as gifts, you know, whether you want them or not. You know, I kind of thought it would be one Webkinz, you know, per child. You'd want your own little virtual pet, and that would be enough for somebody. But, you know, people have like, you know, 10, 20.
Oh, 20.
Yeah. You know, I have a question and a share, actually, a question for Bob first. What Web 2.0 services are you encountering that are introducing that commercialism into your class? Like, give me an example of the ads that you see or whatever.
Well, I mean, let's talk about the biggest one, Google, right? And so there I am, you know, using Google, which I do dearly love, but I mean, it is a corporation, it is a product. Who knows where that's heading? Already we feel a little worried about what they're doing with our information. So, you know, to me, that's that's, you know, a big one right there. But then there's a lot of great sites out there that, you know, are funded because there's some banner advertising.
Yes.
So, you know, it's just starting to catch up with me. I mean, I've thought about it, but I'm really starting to think, wow, this has really slipped in. You know, when I was in the classroom without Web 2.0 tools, I mean, I was, you know, I try to keep everything in my frame. And, you know, when I bring in something that has commercial potential, that I really talk about that. And I don't think I'm doing it with every single ad. Certainly I'm not. And part of me thinks, well, it's just so ubiquitous that we're all becoming immune to it. You know, like this advertising may not have the effect that it used to have on us, but I'm not sure of that. And I actually want to, you know, get my older kids to start thinking about this and actually respond to that question. Like, what are the ethics of using these tools? And is this okay? Or, you know, even what you're asking about Webkinz, you know, is this okay to bring this in when it's a product? I think, you know, like Webkinz is so great. And when I first saw it and my daughter was on the quizzes, I was like, yes. Oh my gosh, this is, we have MEAs, Kevin, up here, you know, that's our test for the state. Right. And I said, oh my gosh, this is like an MEA, you know, these questions. And, you know, I think what we're still doing a lot is sort of duct taping and, you know, mashing up these tools that we see out there to go with what we want in the classroom. And there's no tool that just totally unto itself is exactly what I want for my curriculum. I always have to tweak it or knock stuff off or add to it. And, you know, I think, you know, that's just the nature. You're not going to get these great education tools because they got to be funded in some way. But, you know, I could see like a Webkinz type curriculum that has nothing to do with a plush stuffed animal that could bring in all those economics, that could bring in all that math that you're talking about, Maria. And, you know, not really bring in like this product at all.
Yeah, I'm going to tweet it here for everybody. I'll tweet it. I'll put it into the chat. It's Wyville is the one that you really want. It's that's a multi-user virtual environment that is academically constructed and driven. It's millions of users worldwide. The problem is when the kid who uses Webkinz looks at it, like my 12-year-old did, they'll turn their nose up at it because it does not come close to the polish and beauty of Webkinz. And so they look at this and go, ew, why would I want to do that? But that whole the environments are there and ready to go, ready for us to use and free with no advertising at all. You raise many good points. In our class, and I'm sure you do this too, we use those ads as teachable moments. When they pop up or we encounter them and we do a search, and you know, we have the kids say, you know, all right, how do we tell which of these is an ad and which is a search? And so, you know, we use it to the extent we can as a positive. The thing I wanted to share about the environment was actually a story relating to Club Penguin that I think still resonates. It's my friend Catherine Parsons, who at this moment or a few minutes ago was presenting on Webkinz at the New York State conference, a technology conference in her hometown. And her son is she's presenting about multi-user virtual environments, and her 5-year-old son is presenting with her. He's online on another screen using Webkinz as she's talking about it. But she told a story about her daughter, who is older, who was on Club Penguin and was shopping for a particular item, and remarked, or she overheard the little girl say, you know, about complaining about the price. And I don't remember the exact words, so I won't try. And she said, that's such a ripoff. I'd have to flip burgers for 3 hours to get enough money to buy that. And this was a child who had been struggling to learn the concept of an allowance for her entire life. And she learned it in Club Penguin in like a day, the value of money.
Right.
So, and when you look at what these environments offer to us as educators, I mean, we can easily use these environments to teach math and all these other subjects if we can just get past some of these other issues.
Right. And when you say flip burgers, you mean in Club Penguinville?
Yes,
flipping burgers?
In Club Penguin.
So
yeah, they
can
do
get jobs there.
Yes, they're burger flippers in Club Penguin. Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
We have one of our special educators at our school this year, had her son was in my class last year, and she was working somewhere else at the time. She's now working with intermediate grades in special ed, and she's very interested in using the Webkinz, having a Webkinz for the kids and setting up a Webkinz environment for some of her students, because she feels that there are academic benefits and highly motivational reasons to get kids to try their academic work through Webkinz. Unfortunately, this year, and I feel kind of odd in talking about only about last year, this year when I started to use Webkinz in the classroom, in fact, introduced my Webkinz, and up until late November, I was able to do that. And then suddenly something happened with the filtering at our school. And no matter how many times my tech administrator tried to unblock the site, we're having trouble logging on. I get the login window and I can't get past that. It just won't load. So maybe you tech guys can help us out with that, because it's something that was changed with the software that we're using to filter.
What is it?
Well, the window that comes up is WebSense, so I'm not really sure.
We use WebSense at our school. If you get me and your tech people in touch with me, I'll get them in touch with our guys, because we use WebSense and it rocks.
And
Webkinz works for us.
Yeah, you get Webkinz to be open. And I don't know, maybe there's something with Flash or something that's not working. Anyway, so Kevin, we'll talk about that afterwards. But my class this year was very disappointed, because they really were counting on, they read our blog, they saw lots of things that were happening that involved our Webkinz. I had a little summer blog for my Webkinz to update what he was doing while he was on vacation. And we really haven't been able to use the Webkinz site for most of this year. I also wanted to share, there was a teacher that we were buddies with in Guelph, Ontario, and she started a Webkinz project as a result of working with us last year, and she called it the Kinz Exchange, and started a blog so that other classrooms that had Webkinz could communicate and share their classroom events through the eyes of the class Webkin, which was kind of a neat idea. And Kevin, I was thinking, in your lab situation, what if you had a Webkin per class, and then the class took care of, you know, when they were in the session, there were aspects of taking care of that Webkinz, as opposed to each individual child having a Webkin.
You could do that.
You were hoping to have a Webkin that each child could use if they didn't have one of their own.
Well, yeah. What I would never want to have. I need as much control over the curriculum as I can get. Mm-hmm. So if the kids can come in and sign into an ES Lab 01 Webkin, for mm-hmm. lack of creativity.
Yeah.
We could then meet virtually in the world and have assignments where I could actually have kids band together and go off and do certain things with their Webkin in the world. And, you know, then whether it involves, you know, whatever curriculum I come up with and actually interact and do things and then come back and report about it, or, you know, necessarily blog, but just share and explore as a class. So I'm really, I guess I should get my head around the one-to-one side of it. Because now if I was in a kindergarten classroom, I would, what you've described would be just terrific. And I could even see having several of them and not necessarily one per kid. But because the lowest level of granularity I could make work would be an entire class grade. Because if I did it with one of my classes in like second grade or third grade, there'd be a riot. People would be just going crazy. And that's 125 of them, and then they come into the lab once a week. I would want to be able to make something meaningful for them to do in the 40 minutes or 45 minutes that I've got with them. So I've up to this point been thinking that that had to be a one-to-one experience, and you're right, maybe it doesn't.
Yeah. The other thing that happens in the Webkinz world is the whole chat room aspect, and I know back a ways in the EdTech Talk chat room, someone was asking about that, and that chat room business was introduced at some point during last year, and then we got into this whole other discussion about, you know, are you just going to let anybody be your friend in the chat?
Yep.
We had some kids that would be at home inviting us to be a friend, and then there would be, I remember one time in class online, someone popped up that we did not know, and it's like, well, what are we going to do? You know, what's the best thing to do? Do we just accept this person as a friend? No, you know. Okay.
And how powerful is that? That's absolutely,
oh my gosh.
That's a home run, because
right.
You absolutely know that when that kid is home and that happens to them, they exactly know what to do.
And they hear that classroom conversation,
yep,
of 17 voices going, oh no, you know, we would not,
yep,
do that. We don't know this person.
See, I think that's the bottom line to the argument, you know. You know, first off, we're talking about a stuffed animal, you know, that kids are going to have in their life no matter what, be it Webkinz or whatever. But we're also talking about this new, you know, realm of social interaction that we've never had. And, you know, if we're not there for the journey, then we're missing a great opportunity for things like that. And even if, you know, it's not happening in school, it's got to be happening at home. And maybe it's not, you know, that parents are sitting there with their child going on Webkinz and going through all this, you know, where's it happening? I think that's no matter what naysayer comes at you, I think that's the bottom line. Like, we really can't miss this opportunity for instruction. I was looking back in the chat notes, the chat, and kind of catching up, and there's some great links in there that I want to just mention so that people listening to the podcast know they're there. Karen Bosch put in Punwapa, and I think you use that some, Kevin, you were saying?
I actually am familiar with it, and I'm going to be doing it this coming week.
I just
started
checking that
out. My students, yes, it's terrific.
And she also put in a Google Doc about safe communities for kids. Thanks a lot for that, Karen. That's great. And I see Lori put in Beanie Babies, which I didn't even know Beanie Babies had a virtual environment as well. So I see that in there. And then, let's see, there was another one that someone put in. Let's see.
We had Penguin, didn't we?
Oh, I didn't put that in yet. Yep. Yeah, and I put the Kins Exchange there too. So these are great links.
And I will get the chat. I'll get the chat log and post that at the EdTech Talk.
Great. Great. That's excellent. Yeah, I mean, you know, like, I didn't even hear of Punwapa until last week. And I think that's what's going to happen. Punwapa is great, because you can't really do any of your own text messages.
Yep.
You can always use canned. And it's a great way to teach geography and world, you know, culture. I just barely scratched the surface. But as I see it, you kind of find other kids that have the same interests as you, and you can go and visit their house in, you know, Australia or whatever.
Whoops.
And then it sounds like you collect cards from,
yes,
your visits. So that's kind of neat.
And they're actual kids. That's the
right.
Cool part. It's an actual person on the other end that, you know, has created a home just like the kids create it. And it's global and it's free and it's completely anonymous.
Right.
I mean, it's very powerful. And I know that some folks have already started to use it. And my plan is to introduce it next week, and I would be happy for, and that's the kind of thing that, you know, kid goes home and say, you know, this is what we did in school today. There's absolutely nothing any parent could find wrong with that site. It's a winner all the way around.
Oh, I'm looking forward to getting to know that better. I think I looked at it at one point. We're going to study Kenya. We have a student whose family grew up in Kenya, so that sounds like a good place to go with that. once
How
I get
are your
it.
kids with reading with reading skills, Maria?
I saw it's kind of heavy text.
Yeah.
Right.
It's
it would probably be a class, hopefully, potentially a classroom activity because we aren't heavy on reading skills. We aren't high.
Yeah, I think that as a classroom, do you have like a smart board or something that you could bring in? Or
I don't. I wish I did, but I'll come down to New Jersey and borrow one.
There you go. I'll ship one right up to you.
We have a Mimeo, I think that's what it's called.
Yes.
Bar, but it has some issues. But I'm the one that gets to use it, so I think that I wish we did. We don't, and we just have to get around that.
Okay, can we just put another link in there? Build-A-Bear even has a virtual community. So, we can't avoid this. I mean, it is it's getting more popular. It's showing up, all over. So I think, a couple of years ago when we started talking about getting iPods for the school, the backlash was, well, that's going to have kids going home and saying they want an iPod, and the parent, that's not fair to the parents. But now all the kids have iPods. We didn't do that, they just have them. So I think it just, you got to kind of wait it out too, and it just also encroaches. What were you going to say, Maria? I'm sorry.
I don't remember.
Sorry.
I have a question or something else I wanted to throw out was I'm holding in my hand a card of Lori Myers, who is a computer lab teacher in Short Hills, and her school is Milburn. It's Milburn Township Public Schools. Their high school was rated one of the 100 best in the country recently, incidentally. They have an after-school club that does Webkinz. And I also know that Vicki Davis's high school her students created an internet safety program that uses Webkinz that's targeted to elementary. So there are some people that are blazing, and obviously Maria's doing it. There are people blazing the trail. There are, a few of you. The thing that when I think through the pressure that I got, the pushback that I got when I introduced the idea, the thing that would deal best with the pressure there would be evidence of these other programs and how they have been used in education, and more importantly, a curriculum that would clearly show how it would be used. And that was sort of my evil plan, was to get an after-school club going, which they haven't ruled out. They're still interested, but they're still concerned. I want to get an army of kids to come after school with their own Webkinz and just go through the site voraciously looking for, because I can't do it. I'm not, I don't have a Webkinz. I mean, my daughter's got, several, but I want to be able to go through their eyes and say, okay, what could we really use this for? And then gather that into a curriculum, which I would then present and say, okay, here's how we're going to do math. Here's how we're going to do social skills. Here's how we're going to do this. Not every day, but you can easily do it. Internet safety. I mean, it's just the reaction that those kids had just is priceless in your class, Maria. It's just absolutely priceless. I mean, you can't, let's draw a picture of, why we need to be safe online. No.
Right.
I mean, it's just, you think of the traditional things that, people would be doing, why, which child is making the right choice? Circle this one, no, don't think so. But that's my challenge, is finding the time to kind of put that together in a summary way and say, look, this is really what I want to do. And then just go ahead and make it happen.
I think another part of this is, probably more than ever, we really need to teach media literacy skills. And, these are great vehicles to do that. And I just put another link into the show notes for Cyber Smarts, which has some great beginning media literacy lessons. There's some great sites that I've been collecting lately as well. But, these are, we looked at, from Cyber Smarts, we looked at different sites to recognize the advertising, and we used Webkinz and Club Penguin to go there. And it was really interesting to, well, there were two things that really stuck out from that experience. One was the kids really were able to identify that this was a site with a product and not just games for them to play games. You know, that's the essence of that lesson. And then it was also really amazing to watch their teachers see them go in, and they weren't allowed to log in or play anything, but to see them go and show all this stuff to their teachers that really had no, you know, if they didn't have kids that age at home, they didn't really know about these sites that we were looking at. And it was a real eye opener for them. So I think, you know, bringing that in to examine, you know, with some of those lessons is a great way to bridge this gap with that backlash.
One of my questions for Kevin was, you mentioned that teacher in New York. Is her presentation available or her work available?
I have to find out. I'm sure she's going to be presenting on virtual worlds. And short answer, probably yes. I think she's mm-hmm. doing an audio track of her presentation. Ooh, wait a minute. I just realized something. Hang on. I have a presentation that I gave with my 12-year-old daughter about these communities. I can't believe I just thought of this. Duh. We went to Kane University in just out in Union, New Jersey. And come on, what is up with SlideShare? Give me a break. And so we wanted to present about these various communities, Webkinz, Club Penguin, and some of the others, the social networks that are out there. This is absolutely the worst designed UI ever. Log me in to SlideShare. And the title of the presentation was Tween Social Networking Sites, They're Here. And she was with me, and we tried to get a friend of hers in via Skype. It didn't work. It was during the school day. It was pretty amazing. And in this presentation, we talked about the various communities that are out there as well. And in addition to these, and some we haven't mentioned, one is imbi.com, which is truly a MySpace for kids that has parental controls built in. It has a little bit of advertising because that's their revenue model is to sell advertising, but it is the preferred platform for teaching social networking safety in an authentic environment, as far as I'm concerned. And another one that just came in is called Woogie World, and yeah, don't you love the name? And Woogie World is very similar, is actually closer to Club Penguin, but is even safer. And looks just as good, and I actually know the founders there, and they are committed to building this thing up. There's no I don't know what their revenue model is or how that works, but there's no plans for like premium membership or anything like that. Okay, here's the link to SlideShare is slow today. Here's the link to the presentation Holly and I gave in at Kane University, and I'll get a hold of Catherine's slides and let you guys know about that. And those others, let me just type those in right now. The MVE one is amazing, and just tragically, their founder died in a plane crash with her son. One of four people that started the company, they were flying somewhere in a small jet, and it crashed. And I don't know how that has affected their company, although it must be. I'm getting there. Hold on. Okay. I don't know how that has affected them, but I had approached our administration about I wanted to use IMBI for the entire fourth grade and teach them social networking in an authentic environment, and that I'm still trying to get traction on. So if I had my own classroom and was responsible for 24 kids, it would give me, I'm pretty sure, the flexibility to be able to do a lot of these things that I really can't right now. Because right. my field of play, my field of view is the entire school.
I guess it still comes back to good teaching and educating parents on why we do this, and also that the benefits of being able to have those authentic discussions about authentic use in the classroom, you know, not circle which is the best use, or in, not the worksheets about internet safety or.
Yep.
And it's good teaching. It's finding what's out there, what are kids using, what's relevant, and using that to the best way possible.
I'm using Scratch right now with my fourth graders. Have you gotten into that yet, Kevin?
Oh, I would love to. It's amazing. We have. I just put it on the computers not too long ago. Yeah. Tell me about your experience with it.
It's the best thing since Toast. I mean, it is higher level thinking and engineering and reverse engineering and design and just really incredible. But it also has a social aspect where there's the Scratch community where you can upload your work. And that's how you can also download other people's work and reverse engineer. And comments can be left for people's work. So, you know, there's I don't know how many safety measures are in place other than if you go on and you see something inappropriate, you'll flag that. And then I guess MIT, that's who's running the site, you know, who made Scratch, will take it from there. And, you know, it's something inappropriate. Came up the other day on the overhead when I went to that site. That's the first time in a year and a half of being in the lab that anything did. And, you know, I got out of it very quickly, and most of the kids weren't even paying attention, you know, that finally paid off. And, and you know, I mean, it was really handled well. They handled it very well. And the teacher was there, and we talked about, you know, like this is what's out there. You know, it's our job as being part of this community to go and flag. And I said, as soon as I finish talking, I'll go over and I'll flag that. And it was already gone by the time I got there. And I don't know if that's because random games come up and it's still in the mix. I have no idea. I've been wanting to follow up with a letter to them. But, you know, there's just some things that we can't avoid. And, you know, there was a game with an inappropriate word written right on the front. But that same word has been written on our bathroom walls, you know, and we've had to deal with that, too, in the past. So, you know, you can't insulate yourself from these experiences. And I think it's better that it happened with us there and talking through it, you know.
Yeah, I'm curious to know so fourth grade they've got enough intellectual capacity to understand the concepts and create stuff without any trouble. And could you go lower? Because I had been thinking about going with fourth grade.
Definitely.
You do think?
Oh yeah. Wow. But I'm starting here with them, and I can talk later offline with you about how I'm working through. But there's some great resources out there, and I'm actually leading them through. You know, I started with sort of the lecture style, showing them go do. And then there's some great videos online because I want to encourage them to be able to find, you know, I mean, they've got to teach themselves how to run the computer. So they're working independently. And then there's those Scratch cards that they put out. And going through like three rounds of this training, you can see the more that they've done it, the more ideas they are getting for their final project. And then, you know, there's some kids that just, they eat this up. And, you know, one of the highlights was when one student, as I was starting, you know, with the baby steps of Scratch, his eyes just bugged out. He jumped up. He said, "I get it. I see where this is heading."
You know? Oh, no.
And it was so classic. Great. Yeah. And he went home. He signed up. He's now teaching me. He's saving me time on the weekend so I don't have to go home and watch a lot of videos. And he comes in and he comes down with another student. And we have lunch, and he's showing me new things. And then, you know, I'll get an idea, and I'll put a challenge to these two guys. And I say, all right, figure out how can we overcome this problem? And they go off and do it. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. And then, you know, I want to end up where the kids are writing home a letter, getting permission to sign up for an account on Scratch, and able to have a social network with a real purpose, you know, where kids are designing, getting feedback, and, you know, that this is more than just, you know, something like Webkinz that we want, you know, not just buying things, but actually working together is sort of my hope. So we'll see where that goes. But, yeah, I'll talk to you about it later for sure, because it's great.
Question for Maria. Are you, you're not in Bob's school, right?
No, I'm not. I'm about an hour, I think it was just about an hour away from Bob's school.
She says dejectedly.
Yes.
Wishing she was there.
But could you I could do a professional night now.
I know the feeling because I'm actually spending a week. I'm spending my spring break with at another school with a middle school library specialist named Peggy Sheehy at Suffern Middle School.
Oh, Peggy.
And Peggy and I are going up there with Berna Jean Porter is doing a week worth of digital storytelling at her school. And, you know, my friends are my colleagues are saying, hey, what are you doing for spring break? So I'm going to go up to somebody else's school and work for a week. That's what I do in my time off. How about you? I was wondering if you could tell us about the socioeconomics of your community. Where are you? Because we're mostly blue collar. We're kind of a mix, very family oriented, very sports oriented. If we wanted to do a free seminar on basketball skills, we'd fill the gym. If we said free academic training, no one would come.
I think we're a mix. I don't think it's a real I'm not real familiar with the exact demographics, but I know in my classroom it's very much a mix. I have parents that whose children are in the all-day program because of need. All of my parents are working at least one job. But then I have some families who are fairly well off. Pretty much it's a rural community. There isn't any industry really in Deerfield, so people are commuting.
Same here.
To at least a half hour away. Some people do commute to Boston and in other areas. A pretty mixed, fairly supportive community in education, but the people who don't have children in school are also concerned about taxes. Our children do not go to high school in our town because we don't have one. They have to travel at least a half hour away to go to high school. And we're a pre-K through 8 school with about 500 students.
Well, it sounds very similar. We're K through 8 with 1,100, but in the elementary, it's evenly split between elementary and middle, but we're a small town also, probably considered rural with not a lot of industry. So we're probably very similar. So what do you think, Bob? I'm sorry, go ahead, Maria.
Oh, I was going to say, it's interesting. We're Deerfield Community School and you're Northfield Community.
Yes.
Is that right?
Trade your north for my deer.
Yeah.
Or your deer for my north.
Yeah. Kevin, Karen's asking if you have used Wookiee World in the classroom or in the lab, in the chat room. Have you actually used that one yet?
No, I haven't. I'm trying multiple angles of attack.
Right. And I was curious, is that where kids can type in their own messages or is it, safe?
I believe it's locked down.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to check that out. So they have to choose from available things. But the beauty of it is it's even friendlier than Club Penguin, even safer because Club Penguin is a little too open in spots, even though they try to keep it under lock and key. And the people behind Wookiee World are just amazing and very, very focused on kids.
That's great. Well, this has been an amazing show. I see we're at about an hour, so I think we should probably wrap up. Just as more backup for your argument, Kevin, I think, have you read the Horizon Report, the latest one that just came out?
No, I just saw the link the other day.
I mean, that's a good thing to hand off too, because again, it's saying, look, the social networking is where we're heading, and it has all kind of ramifications for, work and school and whatnot. And I think that's, the writing's on the wall and bringing that into the argument will help. But I would like to have a follow-up with this podcast, if you both are willing, to see if you're able to implement this, Kevin, and how it works out and just keep following your progress, if you're willing to do that.
Absolutely.
Well, that'd be great.
That would be great.
And Kevin, you're going to help me get my network,
Webkin's working. Yep.
Webkin's World back up again, because it would just be great to could continue. Bob, there was also something from NCTE that was announced within the past couple of weeks that was toward a definition of 21st century literacies, which then also just supports this whole business about defining what literacies are and how to help our students be a part of that. So that's another backup for Kevin as well.
Right. Can you send that link? I know I've seen that, but I'm just gonna... I may have trouble finding it. That'd be great.
There's a Horizon report.
There's the other one.
Okay, great. Let me grab
it. It really blends well with the NETS, the new NETS for students. NCTE, it's really great.
Well, thanks to everybody for listening, and people in the chat room, thanks so much. And I guess we'll stop streaming and maybe continue the conversation if you guys are up for an after show conversation. You've been listening to Bit by Bit. We will follow this conversation up, and it just brings up so many issues that are so great. Thank you both so much. I think this is I haven't done a Bit by Bit show with other people. That's usually a Seedlings realm, and of course I like talking to other people more than I like talking to myself. So thanks so much, and
thank you for having us,
getting me back to doing a Bit by Bit. All right, thanks for listening.
Wonderful. Kevin, great questions that got us started.
Yeah,
thanks a bunch.
Exactly.
My pleasure.
Well, we'd also like to thank the EdTech Talk Network on the world, edtechtalk.com on the World Bridges Network for allowing us to stream this broadcast. As always, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.